And the intervention line is 818-817-0021, whether it was angelic or you name it. Hey, by the way, you know the traffic in Los Angeles is abominable, right? So I'm on the freeway, and there's a guy in the middle lane, and I'm behind him. And there are cars on the left, cars on the right. It's packed. He wants to get on to the right so he can get off, right? He can't do it. There are too many cars there. Nobody's letting him in. So what does he do? He stops on the freeway. I almost hit him. He stops on the freeway. The name of the game when you're driving, and if you can't get over to get your exit, you keep going and you take the next one and you double back and do what you do. But you do not stop on the freeway, unless your car's, of course, stopped in front of you, of which there was none for him. Anyway, let's pick up some of the calls. We'll go to Mike in Toronto on the wild card line. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay. Two things would have saved your burned throat.
What?
The Zodiac and Brad Steiger.
Brad.
The Zodiac, because if you knew your own chart, then you could be aware of where the planets are now and how they affect your birth chart.
All right. And what about Steiger?
When you burned your throat, if I'm not mistaken, it was around the 22nd?
No. It was after Thanksgiving. It was the Monday night into Tuesday morning after Thanksgiving. That would have made it.
Oh, the 26th.
26th, 27th, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. So right around that time, the orbiting Uranus now was, and it still is, squaring your own birth Uranus. And Uranus is the planet of accidents. So you have to be careful, actually, even now.
Oh, yeah.
Until it passes. And then again in March, you have to be careful.
All right. I will do that. I will note that and remember it. That's vital information. Okay, here we go. More open line calls. Let's go to Port Townsend, Washington, west of the Rockies. Sid is with us. Hey, Sid, good morning.
Good morning to you too, George.
How are you?
Oh, wonderful. First of all, before I get to my topic, I'd like to say Douglas Dietrich is great. In the room I'm in right now, 16 years ago, a World War II vet, Marine on Iwo Jima, passed away in the hospital bed. We brought it home for him.
Perfect.
Loved him dearly, and he loved his country and despised his government.
Well, you know what? There's nothing wrong with that.
And secondly, the pizza roll thing, you did save one kid. I told my kid about it. And we like to get organic burritos. They're frozen, and we microwave them.
Oh, you got to be careful.
And exactly. And I taught her how to do it. Cut it in half and munch on it carefully. Don't just pop it in your mouth.
That's right.
So you saved one kid tonight.
Super. It's worth it.
My topic is the flesh-eating bacteria.
The MRSA?
Not MRSA. Flesh-eating bacteria that moves quickly across the skin. And my best friend died in 2002 from it. And it moved up his stomach, chest, arm.
Oh, that's a necrotizing fasciitis. Is that what it's called?
I'm not sure. Your screener tried to. All I know is his wife told me a couple of years
Tom,
later.
Tom hates bacteria and diseases.
Okay.
He's like a germaphobe.
It just killed him. It killed him quick in the hospital, Royal Oak, Michigan.
I know that very well.
Okay.
Was it Beaumont Hospital?
Pardon me?
Beaumont Hospital? Was that the name?
I'm not sure because we were a couple thousand miles away.
Okay.
But anyway, I blurted out. I blurted it out, and I said, well, they just didn't know to put him in a decompression chamber. Barometric decompression chamber.
Will that work?
Well, this is what's so weird about it. In the mid-90s, I read an article in the Seattle Post-Intelliger or the Seattle Times or perhaps USA Today, and they had taken a girl who had flesh-eating bacteria and put her in one of these chambers, and it stopped it in its tracks.
That is dramatic.
I know. And so what I'm asking you tonight, could you please put your people on this or the Coast to Coast listeners and find this article or any doctor that knows about it, but it stopped it. I'm not saying it cured it, but it stopped it from spreading.
I know a guy who works with doctors who have these chambers. I'll check in with him.
Thank you. And that's my call. And I tried to get on when there's a topic on your show. I couldn't get in, but I'm in now, and thank you so much.
You were on hold for about an hour, weren't you?
Pretty much.
That's amazing.
But I'm pretty steadfast.
You working? I mean, what do you do when you're on hold for an hour? I mean, do you walk around and do things or what?
No, you pretty much pee in a bucket, George.
That's great. All right. Let's go to Craig, Intervention Line, San Jose, California. Craig, thank you for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good.
That's good. Thank you, number one, for your service to our country.
You are welcome.
Yeah, my son's in the Navy down there at Point Loma.
9 years. Of course, I never saw any combat. So
yeah, well, preface. He has. He's a CB. He goes with the Marines everywhere.
Well, so. Knock on wood. That all is well.
Yeah, we almost lost him in Fallujah, but they missed him.
Oh, yeah.
So we were pretty happy about that. But what I'm calling about is, you know, when you're young and things happen and you don't put things together till you're older and you look back on it.
And you say, I wish I could have.
Well, I wish, or I didn't. I wish I didn't do that.
Yeah, that's true, too. I'm still saying that.
Yeah. I grew up in La Puente, California. And we used to go to Huntington Beach every summer. And I was only about 7 years old. And you know the riptides down there.
Yeah.
They're terrible. Well, I got caught in one.
And it pulled you away, didn't it?
And I was gone until all of a sudden, right behind me, this man stands up with me in his arms.
He caught you?
Yeah, I'm looking up at him. I'm a little kid looking up. I can still see him. And he goes, are you okay? I go, yeah. So he started walking in with me, and he got me to the shore where I was about ankle high in water. He goes, you sure you're okay? And I said, yeah. And I glanced away and turned back, and he was gone. I didn't figure it out till I was in my 20s.
And then you realize.
Yeah, George.
It's real.
That's only one of a thousand things that have happened. But you know how that goes. Once they start. I think that guy is still with me.
He's still following you.
In fact, I'm the guy that called you the night that you had on the MRSA subject about the beauty queen.
Yeah.
And I had MRSA in my nose.
That's
and it was going into my brain.
Oh, my God.
I still have the recording of it because I'm a Coast Insider and I play it for my kids.
How did you beat that?
You know what, George? I just broke out about a month ago again.
No.
Yes, in my finger, and I went to the doctor, and George, they don't realize what it is, because I said, would you please culture this? And he goes, oh, I'm just going to put you on a Bactrim. And I said, Bactrim is not going to kill this. My finger was like, you know what a boil is.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
This is 10 times hotter than a boil.
Tom's got one.
Your whole hand, my whole hand was throbbing from my finger. So I said, please, please culture it. And he wouldn't. He put me on Bactrim.
Was he a dermatologist?
No, just a regular urgent care doctor.
Ah, see, that's why.
Okay. So what I did is 3 days later, I started getting an allergic reaction to the sulfate, right? So I called back in and they put me on doxycycline. Well, that didn't even have enough power to. I had to go back on the vancomycin.
But that works for you?
Yes, the vanco knocks it right. I mean, George, I had it for 10 days. The skin would not grow back over it. And after two IVs of the vancomycin, the skin started to grow back. Then they put me on Zyvox, which is $50 a pill twice a day.
You're like a human pharmacy.
Yeah, George, I'm telling you, they don't know what this stuff is.
No, they don't. And how do they, are they like wear gloves around you and things like that?
They come in like it's like a clean room for a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you've got
radiation all over you or something.
Yeah. Like I'm Typhoid Harry, you know, and also, but they do not know what it is. I do know this though, George, if you stay boned up on your vitamins.
What kind?
Vitamin C, especially.
It fights it?
Yes, and I also read that it feeds on meat proteins, not vegetable proteins.
Well, you might be right about that. And how are you doing now?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I was right in the middle of doing a remodel for my mom. And when I got it, and I couldn't afford to let it jump on me, and it sometimes, you know, you get it forever. You never get rid of it.
I mean, do you have to wash all your clothes and everything?
Oh, George. Well, it's like if you get a little pimple on your face, it's traumatic. You have to get a bacteria cream on there right away.
Wow. All right.
When I shave, I have to use alcohol and hydrogen peroxide, everything.
All right. Take care of yourself. Get rid of all that stuff. Let's go to Largo, Florida. Keith's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Keith, go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Norrie. Nice to talk to you, first of all. Listen, before the end of the last hour, you had mentioned that everybody needs to pay their fair share of the taxes. And I was curious, does that include the 47% that does not pay their any taxes at all?
I think everybody should pay some amount of taxes.
Okay, because I'm working my finger to the bone. I'm a single white guy, and it's just, man, it's demeaning to see some of these people that are around the dole.
Now, you know, if it were up to me, I would do away with the entire tax code and go to some kind of use tax where you get 100% of your money. You got to pay a little bit more for stuff if you decide to go out and buy it, and that people who are under a certain level would get a voucher check in order to offset that. I don't think people who are not making a lot of money should have to pay higher taxes when they don't have the money for it. But I would love for you to be able to have 100% of your money, do with whatever you want. If you want to buy a shirt and pay 16% tax, so be it. But you know, at least you'd have your own money.
Now, I agree with you on the tax code because it does need to be revamped. There is definitely a problem with it.
Yep. That was one of my platforms had I run. They're trying to push me to run in 2016, but I will not do that. Amy in Kansas City, Kansas, you're up with us. Hello, Amy.
Yeah, George. You got this old 80-year-old woman steaming so hard you could probably fry an egg on her head.
Perfect.
Roosevelt, why don't they tell what he actually did for us?
He did some good things, didn't he? I wasn't around.
I didn't know what a pair of shoes was or a dress was till I was 4 years old, and he put the shoes on my feet. He put the dress on me.
Well,
and he gave men back their dignity.
Let me ask you something. If Dietrich is right and Roosevelt did some of those heinous things, would that bother you?
Well, we didn't know it.
No.
That's
what I'm saying.
He taught us how to plow the ground right, so there'll be no more dust bowls. He made outside our outside toilets. You know, he fixed dams, and every house that didn't have a well, they drilled a well for us. All the courthouses, all the schools, all the dams, all the bridges, were done by men that couldn't find a job, and the money was done away with for 3 years. He shut the banks for 3 years. And when they reopened them, your money was still there, just like it was when they shut them.
What do you mean? He shut the banks for 3 years?
Because the money was not used. When you worked, you got what they called strip. A strip.
What's a strip?
How many hours you worked, you got so many strips. And you go to the store and you buy your food with a strip.
You didn't have money?
No. And everybody turned their gold in.
Right, I know about that.
And they were given an IOU, so when the banks opened, then they could get the money for their gold.
But people waited 3 years for this?
They had to get the money situation right. See, used to, you couldn't have a dollar bill if there wasn't enough gold in Fort Knox to back up that dollar.
Yeah, that's right, but he did away with that then, right?
No, he didn't.
Doug said he did.
Well, he didn't.
Who did?
Truman.
Well, you sure?
Yep, right after Roosevelt died.
Who went after the gold, though? Roosevelt did.
He got the gold so they could melt it down and put it at Fort Knox. I that was beyond me. I was just a kid. I was born in 1933. And I know that his answer to food stamps was everybody in the house that was 16 and older got a spade, a rake, a hoe, and a shovel, and 10 packets of seed to plant. That was his answer to food stamps. You grew it, you canned it, you ate. If you didn't grow it, you went hungry.
Those must have been amazingly rough times then.
Well, it was. But before he became president, if you couldn't pay your debts, you went to debtor's prison.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And your children went right along with you. And if you got old and feeble, you went into the poorhouse. and died in the poorhouse.
Well, who wants to die in a poorhouse?
Well, that was all there was. That's all there was. And the little orphanages, they had to take the children and farm them out to farmers for labor so they could at least get something to feed them.
You think we're better off now, Amy?
No. You people say you're hard up. My God, it only takes one TV in a house to watch it. You could only watch one at a time. And every kid don't need a cell phone. Every kid don't need a car. You're poor when you're hard up when you walk and pull a wagon, put your kids in it to go to the grocery store.
I bet you remember sitting in your family room, your parlor, I guess you called it that, right?
No, it was all just one room.
One room, listening to the radio.
No, we didn't have one.
You didn't have a radio?
Money. No, because there wasn't no electricity at that time.
Wow.
My job was to clean the chimneys for the kerosene.
And your bathroom was outside? The old outhouse.
Yeah, and see, we didn't like, the kids didn't like, because when they came along, the WPA put them in, they put a concrete floor in, then they put the toilet, I guess you call it, bolted to that concrete, and then they bolted the outside to it. We couldn't tip them over no more on Halloween. We didn't like that.
You've seen it all.
Yes, because I remember the first electric light was just a string down out of the ceiling with one light bulb. That's all we had.
How old do you know?
80.
80 years old.
I was born in 33.
If you could be any age again, what age would you like to be?
I would live exactly like I did through all of that in World War II, because people that were any good and were not money hungry, everything was done, trade this, trade that. One man got too many potatoes, another got too much corn. They traded it.
You miss those days?
Yes. When a man's handshake was his word.
Yeah, well, that should be the same now, but you're right, it's not. Thanks for the call, Amy. Be well. Let's go to Carl, Toronto, Canada, first-time caller. Hey, Carl, go ahead.
Hi, George. I've got a question for you.
I'm hoping
that you'll be able to remember this. It was about a week ago, and it was a nice day, relatively okay, good weather. And I was returning home, and I was turning the corner onto my driveway, and I was kind of shocked to see this, and I thought it was kind of unusual. I didn't think anything of it. And I came face to face with an eagle, and he was standing in the driveway in between a pair of wings. And now, I think it was a pigeon, but it was a pair of wings and an eagle. And I had been living in this neighborhood for about 9 years, and I had never heard of eagles anywhere in the neighborhood at all. This was the first time I saw it, and I looked him square in the eye, and he turned and flew away. And I pulled up, and I saw the two wings laying there, nothing left but the two wings. And I thought it was really weird, so...
Where'd the rest of the body go?
Well, I presumed he ate the majority of the bird, but I thought it was kind of weird that, you know, he just left the two wings. So anyway, the following night I was listening to your show, and you were speaking to, I don't know if it was a professor, and he mentioned a story or something, I'm not sure if it was a prophecy night or what, but he was talking about an eagle and two wings as referring to it as some kind of symbol. And I don't know if you remember what that was about. I was just curious if you do.
I do not remember what that was about. Maybe that was not me on that night.
No, it was you. You were talking to this guy.
Was it Jim Sparks who was on for a little bit before his phone went nuts?
I think it might have been, but it was it struck me because then I remembered, and it was like, that was really strange.
Yeah, we had a heck of a time trying to hear him then, so we did not. But no, I can't help you there. I'm going to come back, though, and take more open line calls on Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, Coast to Coast AM is live for you 7 nights a week. On Saturday, our special guest with John B. Wells will be Joseph Farrell, as we'll talk about his work and his work toward humanity on a collision course with the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And then on Sunday, Ian Punnett joins us with a number of great topics, including the Lincoln Conspiracy. So make sure you're all part of that this weekend on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll be back with your phone calls in just a moment. And our first TV show is going to be December 14th, which will be next Friday. So I wanted to back that in. So when you take advantage of your 10 days free, you at least get to see that show. So go ahead and do what you have to do. by going to that website, which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com under the video excerpt section that you'll see on the highlight reel. Let's go back to the calls. We're going to Pearl Harbor now. George is with us on this special day. Hi, George.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, I wanted to talk real quick about the building that I work at on Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
I work in the PACAF headquarters on the Hickam side of the base now, and that used to be a dormitory back during December 7th, 1941, and it was hit pretty hard by the Japanese. About 150 Army Air Corpsmen died in the building that day.
Oh.
And I worked a 24/7 watch rotation, and on a regular basis, you can walk through different portions of that building, and you can see people in old Army-style uniforms. You can hear moaning of people, doors open and close on their own. It's pretty haunted.
There's got to be a lot of emotion there and spirits and everything else.
There is. There's still bullet holes in the staircases. The side of the building still has shrapnel. I mean, just the whole building, I mean, it's been preserved very well.
Well, you know, it's like Gettysburg, where you've got, you know, so many things that have happened there, so many people that have lost their lives, that these spirits are still hanging around. Tom's got a text message for us.
This one is from David in Nashville. George, I see shadow rodents and shadow people all the time. I think I have an eye disease. Can these things be real?
Well, first of all, if you think you have an eye disease, go to an ophthalmologist, get checked out. I would, first of all. But secondly, if you're okay with your eyes, yeah, they could be real. I used to see shadow rodents.
Well, I think he's saying he has the disease, and that's why he's seeing these things right
now. No. If you have an eye disease, you're not going to see the rodents.
No, that's, in other words, people who don't have eye diseases don't see these things. And since I'm seeing them, I must have an eye disease. I think that's what he's saying.
But I don't think he has an eye disease.
So you think they're real.
That's right. But just to be on the safe side, go to an ophthalmologist.
I remember you told me once that you saw one and it turned out to be a mouse or something.
I have seen shadow rodents going across the street, across a road. They had like little, they looked like little armadillos. Why are you laughing?
I'm not laughing. I just,
are
I've
you
never,
laughing at I've, the fact no, no, that no, no, I no, saw no. shadow rodents?
I'm not laughing at that. I've just never seen one, and to hear you describe it.
And then they had a little antenna on their heads.
Really?
Yep. And they scurried across the road.
Do you have an eye disease?
No. I don't think so.
Okay, good.
I did have LASIK a long time ago.
And your throat's feeling better?
I'm about 80%. I'll be ready for your TV taping this weekend.
Good. Those shows are coming out phenomenal, so I'm glad you're doing better.
All right. Next up, we go to our wild card line. Michael is in Conroe, Texas. Hey, Michael. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. It's been a long time. I've been waiting. Many things have been rushing through my mind, but I was calling about the gentleman Dietrich that you had on in the beginning.
Yeah.
My father was in the Navy. He was in the unit that broke the Japanese code.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, he did not do it himself. He was in the unit.
He was part of the group. Okay.
And that's a whole other story about how they do that code. No one person knows how the code works. He just listened for noises and wrote symbols, and then somebody else took the symbols and made them into another symbol, and somebody else took them and translated them into Japanese, and somebody else translated to English, so no one person could tell you how the code was broken.
Huh.
But the gentleman had some facts. I have a master's degree in history, and I, of course, my father was in World War II, and most of his friends were in it. And a matter of fact, we have a living veteran here in where I live. We just celebrated him, you know.
It's got to be in his high 80s, right?
Yes, yeah. He is. And he was at Pearl Harbor, and I had a chance to personally talk to people who were at Pearl Harbor. And, well, the gentleman made a couple of things, like he mentioned planes on, I believe, Wake and Midway. Well, I very rarely recommend to compare a movie to something, but he said 12 of those planes, which is true, were Douglas dive bombers or torpedo planes. And if you remember the movie Midway, 12 of those planes attacked a defenseless carrier, and they were all shot down. So I don't see how deploying 12 planes would be a rear action to defend against six fleet aircraft carriers with 60 other combat warships. And then the 12 other planes on Midway were Wildcat fighters. They have six 50 caliber machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
That would be useless against that kind of thing. And if you remember, if you've ever seen pictures, those ships could not have been chained together. The Oklahoma managed to move out into the harbor before she flipped over. And the West Virginia or Nevada or both of them got underway, but one of them was hit, and the captain decided to beach it before it went into the channel.
Yeah, seven of them were together, and then
yes,
one was out.
So three of them were able to get away because they couldn't have been chained together. It would have taken too long to get underway. And to get underway that quick, I don't think those would have been novice seamen. And second, and lastly, you know, he talked about the men. Yes, they did hear the men knocking in the Oklahoma, and they tried to get them out. But when they opened the holes, the air that was left in the bottom of the ship that they were in went out through the holes, and the water came in, and they drowned. So they couldn't open the ship, or the air would come out that they were breathing.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
You see?
And that's why they didn't want a hole made.
Yeah, they did do it at the very back. They have pictures of them, and you can actually see the men's hands come out, but the air rushes out just then, and the water fills up, and they can hear them drowning.
Yeah. I sure
they knew after the first attempt, we can't do this, and they couldn't think of anything else.
It was horrible. They just had to let them go.
Yeah, they had to. I'm not surprised that they
okay.
would. I'd be surprised they'd be down there for weeks.
I don't know about the chaining of the ships. He contends that that's what they did.
Well, it would be, you know, like I said, three of them managed to get underway very quickly. There were about 270 planes in each wave.
As a matter of fact, of the eight that got hit, six of them eventually went back into action, didn't they?
All of them came back into action except for the Arizona. And that was the other thing, too. He said they were all old dreadnoughts. The Pennsylvania and Arizona and two other ships were actually commissioned in 1933 through 36. They were actually the first real super battleships. If you look at them, you can tell they're completely different from any kind of ship you would call a dreadnought. We have down here the USS Texas, which served in World War I and II, and it is a dreadnought. It's a super dreadnought, and you can tell the difference. The 5-inch guns are built into the hull. They're not capable of having their elevation raised too much.
Okay. Well, thanks for that perspective, too. And that's one of the good things of the program. No matter what side of the fence you're on, at least you're going to get different views. Let's go to Marie in Texas on the intervention line. Hello, Marie.
Hi.
Tell me about your intervention. What happened?
I died.
You died?
Yes.
What happened?
May, I died. Previously, I had been working, and my asthma had got so bad I had to retire.
Okay.
And I live about 3 miles from the shopping center. I had walked there. I don't have a ride. And I walked back. That night, I had a bad attack of asthma, and I was suffocating to death. And I knew I was dying. And I asked God, before I die, let me see Jesus. And he told me, he said, if I let you see him, you won't be able to look at him. I said, that's okay. Let him come anyway. I went to a room that was blue, and it was a man in there with a long white robe. And when I looked up at him, there was the most beautiful halo of flowers and lights. It was so bright you couldn't look at it.
That was the man, wasn't it?
Yes. And he told me, he said, I'm going to send you back. So I woke up. I came back.
And here you are.
And when I looked at the clock, it had been an hour from the time that I had looked at the clock and knew I was dying.
And you, and ever since, you've been fine?
Pretty much.
All right. Miracles do happen. There's no doubt about that. Deborah in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Deborah, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, George, for taking my call. I've been listening to Coast to Coast since 1996, and I made it a promise to call today because it was Pearl Harbor Day.
Okay.
And I did not get to hear your guest in the first hour because I was in a veterinarian triage. But I'm glad I got to get to talk to you. And I just wanted to share a little bit of experience. My mother was at Pearl Harbor when it was bombed. My grandfather was a colonel in the Marines, and so they lived on quite a few naval bases.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather actually, before all the wars and that, he was in China for 5 years. And after our family kind of talked about it, because he hung out with Mao and Chiang Kai-shek when they were quite young. They weren't, hadn't come to power. But so he was pretty much in the know. And before my mother died in 96, she finally told us why she was afraid of thunder, because she was afraid of thunder more than a lot of other people.
I would guess because of the bombs, huh?
Well, this is what she said. She said that she says, I remember my dad holding me, and it was 3 weeks before Pearl Harbor was bombed, and she heard these bombs, that, or thunder, she thought. And their dad said, don't worry, that's not thunder. That's only the Japanese practicing.
Oh, jeez. Practice they did, huh?
Yes, and then I found it quite interesting. I believe it was in 2000 that they decided to take Pearl Harbor off from the calendar as a sort of a holiday. And I believe it came back on after 2001.
Yeah, it's not a holiday, but it's definitely on the calendar these days. As a matter of fact, happy Hanukkah to those of you of the Jewish faith, because that starts this weekend. And here we go into the festive holiday season. Next up, let's go to Eric in Colorado Springs. Only got about a minute for you, Eric. Go ahead.
Yes, George. Nice to talk to you. I've been looking forward to talking to you for a while.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
I wanted to talk about astral projection, and I hear you know a little bit about that.
I know a little bit about it. I had one experience myself at 11, but I've never been able to duplicate it. I've gotten close.
Well, I've done probably about 40. If I were to count, I'm probably off a few times. I'm sure I can't remember them all.
Do you do it at will?
Yes. At first, I would have to suppress them by drinking alcohol or whatnot because I did not know what they were. But now, I was listening to Dr. Bruce Goldberg a couple of days ago. And he really opened my eyes. I, when he said, if you do marijuana, you know, get rid of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he does not believe that anybody should have any mind-altering substances, especially when they want to enter the astral state or do teleportation or remote viewing or anything like that.
I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the lights, and I also see a ghost, cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. See the light, and I also see a ghost, cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast, cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Colanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.